Thank you very much, Mark, for inviting me here today, and I want to thank you all for being here today to listen to my personal story. I'm going to take you on a journey through our life, and I think we have some pictures that I want you to meet my family and to see how normal we appear and to see how this opioid crisis affects everybody. And like Mark said, probably everyone in this room has been affected in some way, shape, or form. You know someone. It knows no boundaries. You know, when I was growing up, and probably when a lot of us in this room, you know, what was your perception of a heroin addict? Some guy that lived in a dumpster, under a bridge, dirty, nasty. That's not the picture today, people. It's not. It's functioning adults. It's teenagers. It's professionals. It's everywhere. That's why I'm here today, to share my story and to share it without shame, because we have to get out. We have to talk about this. It's that serious. It has been escalated through our government. They're now finally paying attention to this issue and trying to do something about it. It's very difficult. We don't know how to treat everybody. It's so individualized. Some people will be treated with medications. Others will be treated without medications. But we've got to get people into treatment and to help them. When this happened to us back in 2014, we were unprepared. We had no idea that heroin was even back in our community. We knew there was the pill problem. The pill mills, and they were coming in just in enormous amounts, and they were being sold on the streets. Then all of a sudden, that was stopped. And then the prices went up. The dealers were charging more. So then those that were addicted to those pain pills had to pay more. Then all of a sudden, heroin came on the scene, and it was a lot less expensive. So that was the new high for everyone, was heroin. May 21st, 2014 was the day that changed our lives forever. That was the day that Alex's friends had an intervention with him. So this is my son, Alex. This was in his, and I'll talk about some of the phases he went through in his life. This was kind of his senior year. He was going to let his hair grow out, kind of his hippie phase. He loved, you know, wanted to get the hair grown out and tie-dye. But, you know, at the same time, this, you know, he was just a fun-loving kid, just a bright personality. But this is Alex. So that's 10 years ago. He graduated from Lafayette in 2007. So I want to introduce to you all Alex Pointer. And I've got some other pictures up here. You want to show a couple more? This is my family. So there's Alex on the left, our younger son Chris, myself, and my husband Kenny. So family of four, we look pretty normal, pretty, you know, you wouldn't look at that kid and say, heroin addict, yep, no. How about another picture, please? There we are. Yeah, Alex was not very happy, as you can see. I made him go to Mickey's house, and he tried to do his best to smile, but I think he was actually putting, I don't know if it was that picture, but, you know, putting the fingers up behind Mickey. So, and that's just Alex. That's how he was, just a fun, loving person. But, you know, the day that they had the intervention, you sit back and you reflect, because, you know, I'm a nurse, and I think, how did I not see these signs? Why did I not know? How did this go on underneath my nose? For years, we come to find out. We did not know the severity at that time either. We just knew that his friends brought him to our house, and he confessed to us what he had been doing. Needless to say, shock, anger, fear. You know, one minute I'm hugging him and I'm crying, and the next minute I just want to punch him in the gut. You know, how did you do this? How did you do this to your mom, your dad, your brother? What happened? How did this get out of control? I had no idea. I will be perfectly honest with you. Because Alex, at the time it started, he wasn't living with us. He was going to college when we believed that all the pills started. Now, in high school, we think about his junior year was when he decided that he was going to try some pot. He was introduced to that, and he liked it. And sadly enough, Alex was I think we have a picture up here of Alex in a football. There he is. He played football at Lafayette. The kid loved football, had a passion for it. Sorry. Absolutely adored playing football and loved going to all the UK football games. But then at the end of his junior year, he decided, Mom and Dad, I'm not going to play football anymore. I'm going to work on my grades. Alex was never one to be, worrying about his grades. If he made a C or a B, he was happy. Hey, I'm passing. I'm doing good. So, you don't think about it that, you're not worried that, oh my gosh, are you doing something wrong? What's going on? He's a junior in high school. He's a teenager. Was he the perfect kid? No. Are teenagers perfect kids? No. Now, maybe you all have experienced a perfect kid, but they're all with flaws, okay? So, should that have been a trigger for me to think, is my son doing drugs? No. So once again, didn't see it. Wasn't obvious to us at all. And he went away. Went away to college, but then he came back. He went away. He went to Louisville his first year, but then he came back and got smart and went to UK. Sorry, Louisville fans. No. But so at that point, he still did not move back home with us. He was living, with friends in houses or apartments. And that's probably when everything just started, he started using for pleasure. And that's what most of them do. It wasn't from an injury, but it was from, one of his buddies probably said, crush this up and snort it, you'll love it. And he did. He had one of those brains with that addictive personality where when you do drugs, there's a chemical released. I'm not going to try to get too technical, but there is a chemical released, and it's dopamine, and that's what makes you feel good. Well, addicts need more and more and more and more of that. So it gets to a point with addicts that they no longer do it for the pleasure. They do it just to survive each and every day because they don't want to be drug sick, and that's pretty sick. It's like the flu 10 times worse. With vomiting and diarrhea and sweats and, when that body's saying, the brain's saying, I need it, in the body, but you're trying to control it, but you got to give yourself more so you can function and be normal. And Alex always appeared to be normal around us. Now, they're very smart and they can be very charming and they know when and where and how to do these drugs. So they're not coming around Mom and Dad or little brother or the rest of the family high. So, you know when and where to do it, and then, you've gotten that over with, and then you can come and hang out with Mom and Dad, go to dinner. Like I said, we never saw any of those signs. Alex, like I said, he was funny, he was charming. The one thing that I will say, and I think it's just a testimony to the love in this community for Alex and our family was... the day of his visitation, I think it was in February of 15. I think we had maybe 17 inches of snow. We had like back-to-back weekends of snow. There was over 1,200 people that they estimated were at Kerr Brothers on Harrodsburg Road. I mean, it was an enormous outpour of love from our friends and family. And I've got great ones here that are still supporting us each and every day. And that's how I'm up here today, is through their support. As I said earlier, Alex went through some phases in his life. At one point, Alex wanted to go country, wanted a big belt buckle, wanted the hat. Then he decided he was going to be all preppy, wanted to flip his collar up and all that stuff. He obviously had his little hippie phase, and he even tried dreadlocks. They didn't go over too well, so we got rid of those very quickly. he loved to express himself through tattoos. One of his famous tattoos, as my friends are grinning back there, was a bottle of Ale 8. He loved Ale 8. And it wasn't just the bottle size, it was this big on his calf. So Alex, he was that generation. They loved tattoos. He was very expressive. That was him. So, you know, he was just a bundle of everything, and just loved him to death. Like I said, he wasn't perfect. And we had, you know, we had our issues with him. We caught him smoking pot in the house one day, and we nipped that in the bud. So we thought we did, at least in the house we did. But it just continued, I think, throughout the course, you know, of his life, probably maybe anywhere from a, 10 to 8 year span of use from the time he probably started till the time he passed away. And I think that was, people will say it's not a gateway. I would beg to differ with that and say that, yes, it was a gateway for my son because his brain loved that high and he wanted to try something else that would get him even higher and have more fun. So I do believe that that was the start, of Alex's addiction. And I mentioned earlier about a functioning addict, and I think Alex eventually became that functioning addict because he maintained jobs. He graduated from the University of Kentucky, and that was probably at the height of his pill use. The heroin use came a little later, shortly, maybe a year or so after he had graduated from UK and wanted to start working on his master's degree. Really? I mean, think about that. Is that your typical, what you would think a heroin addict would want to do? But once again, that's where we are with this epidemic. It's just, it knows no boundaries. We still had no idea any of this was going on. We knew that he smoked pot, okay? And he was very open about that, and he had the argument of, well, it's legal here and it's legal there, and it's going to be legal here soon, Mom. What are you worried about it for? Well, he had his argument and we had ours. And sometimes, as you well know as parents, you pick and choose your battles. He was still going to school. He was working. Just don't do it around us. In 2013, it was in 2012 in December, he graduated from UK, was very, very thin, was having all kinds of bowel issues. I thought it was Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis, something like that. He was, really sick, but he fought through and managed, once again, to graduate in December. Well, hindsight's 20/20. I think a lot of that, now looking back, was that he was trying to come off the drugs himself. He was trying to stop that. He was trying to do him cold turkey and was losing weight and getting sick under a lot of stress. So I had no idea at that time. He asked me, we went to several doctors here in town, and, drug screens, the only thing that would come back on a drug screen would be marijuana. So nothing else was popping up. So once again, I have no reason to suspect my son is snorting pills at this point. I take him to Cleveland Clinic. I throw him in the car and we drive up there 4.5 hours. We're there for one solid week, Monday to Friday, and he went through every test imaginable. They couldn't find anything. He even ate radioactive breakfast, and they watched that go through his system. Nothing. They did all kinds of labs. You name it, they did it. Everything was coming back normal. Probably just some gastritis, just some, irritation of the stomach, the lining of the bowel, nothing that they could really say, you've got Crohn's disease. Looking back, once again, I think this was his cry for help, but he would never come out and tell me. And it would be so bad some days up there that he would beg me to take him to the emergency room for pain medication. I know Crohn's can be really bad and very painful. So can ulcerative colitis. So, yeah, I'm going to take care of my son. I took him to the ER there at Cleveland Clinic. They gave him pain medication. He was fine. Didn't click with me. Never dreaming that at all. So, you know, we do the Cleveland Clinic thing. That was in 2013. So we'll fast forward here a little bit. I don't know, do we have any more pictures? Let's see what else. Okay, so there's his graduation picture. You know, there we are at UK. That was December of 2012. But it's not real good because it's kind of dark, but he is much thinner, you know, in that picture there. There's another one we have of, you know, Alex and I. We just, you know, we always had fun together. He was just my laughing buddy, and, you know, we would joke and carry on. I guess, you know, so May, like I said earlier, May 21st, 2014 was the day that our lives changed forever. His friends had an intervention with him. They saw what he was doing and they said, that's enough. So they took everything away from him, the needles, the spoons, the tourniquets, you name it, the heroin. And they brought him, one girl brought him to our house. And you can just imagine, you know, the shock and awe of heroin. You're what? You've been using heroin? You're addicted to heroin? Every emotion, like I said, anger, sadness. I want to punch him. I want to hug him. I don't know where to send my son. Where do you send? I know we have Cardinal Hill, or not Cardinal Hill. The Ridge, thank you. The Ridge. Do they deal with heroin addicts, or how bad is this, and when did it start, and what have you? Everything is, it's just those 24 hours were they were chaotic. His friends, though, had friends that had been through this before, and they said, Lori, we figured you wouldn't know where to send him. Here's the name of a place in Georgetown, Kentucky. Well, who would have thought it? I mean, does anybody here know that there's a rehab place in Georgetown, Kentucky? There is. We know of, my husband and I, we searched the internet, and there's literally thousands and thousands of rehab centers all over this country and lots here in this state. Had no idea. Never had to deal with it. So I immediately called, and I said, you know, my son has just told us that he is using heroin. We need to get him in right away. How soon can we get him in? We, you know, do you have a bed available? They had one for him that next morning. So that night, it was kind of, we like kept a vigil on him where, you know, we didn't want him to get out of the house. We took keys away. We took phones away. We took, you know, his laptop. We wanted him, basically, he was a prisoner of our home there until we could get him to rehab. And that next morning, you know, Mom, I'm fine. I don't need to go. No, Alex, you're going. No, I'm fine. I can do this on my own. No, you're not. We're going. So we got him in the car, and, you know, he wanted to go. He didn't want to go. It was a lot of mixed emotions. So he's in there for 30 days. He did great, okay, for that short period of time. And let me tell you, 30 days is not enough. If you ever have to go through this, at least a six-month program at a minimum has to happen, and I hope that that is what our government, you know, can come to terms with, that 6 months, if we're going to do anything to help end this crisis and get these people back on the road again. So he, in his charming, manipulative way, and a lot of addicts are very manipulative because they know how to work it. They know how to get what they want, and Alex did. He was a charmer. And I wanted, you know, you want to begin to believe them and to trust them. So, I lost all trust with him on May 21st, 2014. Don't trust you. Right now, I'm not really liking you a whole heck of a lot. But, so he had one therapist who was this guy was wonderful. I mean, he was very raw, very open. This guy had been a former addict himself. He was, this guy was in really bad shape. Got himself fixed and was now counseling other people. And he was real honest with Alex, what could and would and might happen to him. And that just scared Alex, and he didn't want to hear that. He wanted someone with a softer touch. So he managed to get himself another therapist, and it was a female And, you know, in her professional opinion, she thought Alex would do well with intensive outpatient therapy after he left the 30-day program. The other guy said, no, absolutely not. You need to find a place that's going to keep him for 6 months. Well, I let him talk me into it. I had to convince my husband, let's try. Let's show Alex we have trust. Maybe that's our first step. But I will back up a little bit. While we are in therapy with him, that's when we started to learn all about this. When he started using pills, the amount of pills he was using on a daily basis. He would crush Percocets and he would snort them. It just would blow your mind. And how, you know, and they became very expensive too. And then that's why he went over and started using heroin. Because it's an amazing high, as they say. It's the best high ever. Anybody that's ever used heroin will tell you that. So that's what he wanted, and he couldn't afford the pills anymore because he was only working part-time jobs also while he was going to school. So, you know, his cash flow wasn't exactly, you know, up there. And Mom and Dad, we weren't going to help him out a whole heck of a lot. We made sure that, you know, he had a roof over his head and had some food on the table. But other than that, he needed to be a responsible adult. So, you know, we learned a lot, but we only had a very short period of time to learn what actually Alex had been doing and for how long he had been doing it. And we asked him one day point blank, because prior to, okay, let me stop there. I'm sorry, I'm jumping around because there's just so much that it's just so important in this whole journey that we went through. So he comes home for outpatient. He lives with us now during his intensive outpatient therapy. So the first 2 weeks, my husband and I were at home with him. I mean, it was a mini prison. He would get in his car. He would drive to Georgetown. He'd have to call me from there. I'd have to see that 502 area code. And then he would do his therapy, come straight home. I knew what time. I had it down to the minute. He better pull in that driveway. Then hand me his keys, cell phone, laptop, boom. You're in prison. Do your chores. Behave. 2 weeks. Everything went well. No problems. Well, time for Mom and Dad to go back to work. He goes to therapy on a Monday. Things are fine. Wow, he did it by himself. Why wasn't there to, you know, oversee it? Tuesday, calls me at work. Mom, my stomach's hurting. I've got the bubble guts, Mom. I don't think I can go up to therapy. Well, all right, honey. Because the medication that he was taking to prevent him from getting high, they did give him a pill that they can take, but they had to take it every day. And that will prevent, if he would try to use heroin, he wouldn't feel any effect from it. Mom, you know the side effects of that medicine. It's making me kind of sick. And so I've already talked to my therapist, and she said, okay, you know, take today off. Well, that was the day he relapsed. That was the day he decided he was going to use again. So remember the pill that he took? And I would take his pills into him every night, hand them over, watch him pop them in his mouth, take a drink of water, boom, then I'd go on to bed. Well, I asked him one day in therapy, I said, wait a minute, how did you get high if I gave you that pill? He said, I cheeked it. I said, you did what? He said, I cheeked it. Put it over in the cheek, swallowed the water, spit the pill out so that he could get high that next day. And he did. That was on a Tuesday. Wednesday, what? Well, I had no idea. Come home, things, you know, he seems to be a little puny, but he's high, just thinking he's just feeling a little puny. Wednesday rolls around, I get another call at work because my husband was out of town during all of this. So this makes it even more interesting. I get a call from his therapist. Lori, I just wanted to let you know that Alex has come in here and he has told us that he has used. He said, he told us, don't even worry doing a pee test. I'm dirty. I've used. Well, once again, my heart just sinks. What am I going to do? But in the meantime, while Alex was in for 30 days, Like I said earlier, my husband and I got on our computers every single night, and we were researching all different places, all different recovery centers all over the country. I mean, Idaho, Michigan, Florida, Texas, Pennsylvania, and all different kinds of treatment centers. There's holistic, there's the 12-step program, there's the one that will, you know, help you through with medications. We finally found one in Florida. And the other, the kind of an important thing is, you know, the cost of these. They're not cheap. I was lucky enough that we found one that took my health care insurance, because Alex was still on my insurance at that time, because he was only 24. So they took my insurance. Wow, okay, great. And we, you know, we did some research on this center down there. We even talked to a doctor over at the Ridge, and she said she had heard about it, and, you know, yes, I think that would be a good place to send him. So I get the phone call that he has used, and he's still up at Georgetown. I said, keep him there, give him a bed there, make him stay there, take his phone, laptop, everything away from him, his keys. I don't want to see him right now. You keep him overnight. Well, they didn't have a bed for him. So I had to call another friend and say, all right, you need to go with me. You drive Alex in his car, and you know, we'll get back down, get him back home. We get him home. I'd made a phone call to Florida already. I called the guy, the intake coordinator, and I said, explained the story. He remembered me. I said, do you have a bed? He said, yes, ma'am. I said, how soon can we get him there? I said, can we pack him up and get him out of here tonight? He said, let me get him a plane ticket, and you can get him out in the morning. We put him on a flight that next morning. We go to Bluegrass Airport. We get passes to sit at the gate with him, because I'm not trusting he's going to get on that plane now. And once again, that night was really, really tough. Tears, anger, everything you can imagine. He's all emotional. I'm going to kill myself. I hate myself. Nobody loves me. You know, we hit all the knives in the house. You know, his younger brother, Chris, who was like 22 at that time, he's emotional. Mom, he's going to kill himself. What are we going to do? It's not going to happen, Chris. Don't worry. He's not going to kill himself. You know, we'll take care of this. So we got through that night. Not much sleep, but we got through. Had his bags packed. Like I said, took him to the airport. We're sitting at the gate with him. And that was a rough hour sitting there, you know, very, very emotional for all of us. You don't know what to say. You don't know what to do. But then time comes for him to board the plane. So we hug and kiss goodbye, get him on the plane, and we stood there at that window until that plane was in the air, making sure that he did get on that plane. And then, you know, you just collapse. You think, how are we going to survive this? You're just a ball of emotions. But we picked ourselves up, got home, and he had to call me when he got to his, he may have had a layover. He had to call me when he, I think, got to Atlanta, and then call me when he got to Florida. And, you know, believe me, I'm trusting him to make it there, and then I'm trusting a complete and total stranger to pick him up and take him to rehab. You know, what else do I have to, I have no control over the situation, but I'm trying to do, my husband and I, we are trying to do the best we can. So there's a lot of trust here, but by the grace of God, he made it there, and he made it safely, and he was welcomed with open arms into this rehab where he was for 7 months. Now, he went through different stages of it, okay? So this is in July of 2014. So he's doing well. He's like the star patient there, and he's helping other people, and he's graduating and moving on to, you know, different places within this rehab center. And he manages to get a couple part-time jobs. And then he asks us one day, will you send my car down? Well, Alex, we have to... You want us to drive it down? Oh, no, he'd already researched it. And once again, I didn't know this. You can have a car shipped down to Florida, and they'll come and put it on a semi and send it down there for you. So, you know, Kenny and I had a really big discussion. Do we show him that we trust him and that we're behind him and supporting him and sending his car down there, which could be, it could be a really big tool to, you know, do a lot of bad things with. But we sent it down. We shipped it down there to him, and he was able to help other people get to their work. He got to his work, or if they needed to go to, you know, their AA meetings or whatever. So it's looking good. Things are positive. Like I said, he had a couple of jobs. Christmas rolls around. And he wanted to come home. So we're like, okay. He said, but I can only come home for 3 days. He said, I don't need to be around. I don't need to be around here any longer than 3 days. Okay, great idea. I'm loving that you said that, Alex. I mean, as much as I want you home with me, you don't need to be here. I'd rather have you in Florida alive than up here in Kentucky struggling with addiction or Deb. So he comes home at Christmas time. We had a wonderful time together. 3 days, very quick, very short, but we were there together as a family. I have another picture. Oh, well, there he is. I'm sorry. This one, he loved to cut the grass too. You know, just kind of your typical kid, hop on that mower, put his, you know, earbuds in. He loved music. So he would get out and mow the grass. Loved to travel. He went out to Red Rock in Colorado, saved his money, went out there with some buddies, loved hiking, loved the gorge, all that kind of stuff. That picture there. That's the last picture I have of Alex alive. That was Christmas 2014. He looked so good. He was healthy. He was, you know, had been working out. That's where they released a lot of their energy, was these guys would go to the gym. He was working out. He would send me videos, you know, working out. You know, he'd have his phone. He'd send me videos. Hey, Mom, you know, look at me. And I'm like, oh, boy. He was really getting into it. But that was his outlet now. It wasn't drugs. It was working out and making himself healthy and feel better. And you know, he was had a little tan going on and, you know, had his hair all done up. He had a crush on Justin Timberlake. So he was trying to, you know, get all pretty like him. And that's his dog, Havana, who is now our grand dog that we take care of. But that's the last picture I have of him alive. Like I said, great time at Christmas. He goes back down to Florida, continues his program, but now he's begun his search for his dream job, and that's to become a high school history teacher. So imagine through all of this, he still kept a focus through even through his addiction and then into his sobriety, of wanting to achieve that lifetime dream of becoming a high school history teacher. So, you know, unbeknownst to us, he's working away on his computer and he's putting in applications all over in kind of like the south central area of Florida. And he calls us one night and he says, I've got a second interview. Well, we didn't know you had a first. What's going on? Tell us about it. Well, he went to a place called, it was in Plantation, Florida, and it was Plantation High School, and he had an interview there for junior history. It was teaching juniors history class, and had an amazing interview with a young, very energetic, from what we can tell, because we talked to her after Alex passed away, but this principal was just probably what Alex needed to get his foot in the door and start that career. So he was offered the job. I mean, we jumped for joy. We thought, thank you, God, he is on the right path. This is going to work. He's going to make it. And once again, so I was still kind of naive at that time, not knowing how bad and how many times people can relapse. Some people will relapse 5, 6, 7, 8 times. But I thought, no, Alex has got this. I know he can do it. So his therapist actually said, Alex, you've done so well. We're going to let you out of the program 2 weeks early because you've done fantastic. You're amazing. You've got a job. You're functioning so well. You know, go on, start your life, buddy. So we helped him in getting an apartment down there. Going to order some furniture from IKEA, get the cable guy, blah, 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 all that stuff. So, February, Friday the 13th, 2015. He leaves his halfway house, had his car packed up. He's headed south to Plantation. He was in West Palm. Head south to Plantation, Florida. On the way, though, he stopped and picked up some syringes because they, you know, found the receipt in his pocket. Now, normally you got to have a prescription for syringes, but, you know, being addicts know how to get things, like I said. So his buddy said, look, just tell him that you're a diabetic and you were waiting on your prescription for your syringes, but you really need them because you got to take your insulin. It worked. Charming Alex, it worked. He got the syringes. Also stopped on the way and picked up a little heroin from his friend that was in the halfway house with him. Friend. This guy had already, he'd kind of been kicked out because he didn't pay his rent. So he's got his heroin, he's got his syringes, he goes straight to his apartment. And it was Friday the 13th. IKEA was going to deliver his furniture, cable guy's coming, everything's going to be set up, he's going to have his bachelor pad, and he's going to start to work on, I think, that following Tuesday, because I think Monday was a holiday. He goes straight into the apartment. Like I said, there was no furniture yet. He has a tub of some things and some ALATs. He puts the ALATs in the refrigerator, and we know that because the detective said, he told us everything that was in the apartment. He goes, and there were these green bottles in the refrigerator. We're like, it's all good. It's good. Don't worry about that. He goes straight back to his bathroom and takes his shirt off, tries to make a tourniquet with his belt, and apparently couldn't get a vein. So according to the autopsy report, he shot between his toes. And that's where the fatal dose was, between his toes. And that's where a lot of them will use. And Alex may have been doing that for quite a while, because he would be at the house with us and he would be swimming or take a shower and walk around in his gym shorts. I never saw track marks, people. Never saw them. But he was smart. He knew how to do it without us seeing it. So the fatal dose was between his toes, on the floor of his new apartment, a bathroom, all by himself. Probably around 6:30 in the morning, something like that. From what we could tell, the receipt, the time that was on the receipt and how long it would have taken him to get to his apartment, because he brought only that bucket in, or that tub in, and nothing else from his car. His car was totally packed. He was found by some friends of his at the halfway house who were going to come down that day, that evening, and help him move in. Well, he wouldn't answer the door. Throughout the day, I had been calling him, hey, you know, trying to find out how things are going. And, oh, by the way, I just shipped all your history books down to you, because he wanted all of his books from UK. Shipped those off to him. Wanted to let him know and just kind of check in with him. Well, he didn't answer his phone. I thought, well, he's trying to put furniture together from IKEA, and he's mad, and he's thrown his phone. Or he's, you know. I just, once again, never in my wildest dreams did I ever think that this had happened to him. So his friends get there. He doesn't answer, but since there's no furniture, and it was a fairly small apartment, we were never there, but he sent us pictures and everything, but apparently they could see through, and I think they saw maybe his feet or legs, you know, they could see something in the bathroom. So they called, obviously called 911. They came, got in the house or in the apartment, and, you know, and there he was. Probably been at least a good 12 hours. So that night, once again, Friday the 13th, the Jessamine County coroner and sheriff show up at our door. It's 10 o'clock. Here, I had thought something had happened to our son, Chris. Had a wreck. It was him. The coroner's trying to tell us that it's Alex, and I'm in complete and total disbelief. No, Alex lives in Florida. Chris lives here. No, ma'am, it is your son, Robert Alexander Pointer, you know, blah, 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 blah. So that was the truth. It was Alex, and he had overdosed. Regardless of how clean and sober he had been for 7 months, how hard he had worked, why he wanted to do it again, I don't know. Was it a little treat to himself? Was it maybe the pressure of knowing I'm going to go in and teach at school and I'm just a little anxious, I need to, you know, kind of curb that? We'll never know. But from May the 21st of 2014 through February 13th of 2015. That was our journey through this whole heroin epidemic. And like I said, that is the last picture that I have of him alive. But I'm, you know, my passion now is to get out and show you all how real this is, and that it can happen, and to share this without any shame. It is what it is. And I hope that I can help other people start talking about it themselves. You know, at first my husband and I wanted to put our head in the sand. We didn't tell our good friends for quite a while. You all didn't know. Because it is kind of embarrassing to think that that's happened to your family. But through the grace of God and the strength of friends and family, you know, I'm up here today in front of you all, and I thank you very, very much.
Thank you.